The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas, along with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. And there aren't many times that I would begin this show by not talking about the Dennis Allen situation yesterday, but Marshawn Lattimore, the trade deadline came and went today, traded Lattimore to Washington, the four-time Pro Bowler, been hampered by the hamstring injury. And I would imagine your phone has been ringing not just today, but really for the last several months for Marshawn, correct?
Well, I think it's just been the last, week, when there was some speculation about him being traded, given a record, that's going to spur calls. And we had a number of them over the last, 4 or 5 days.
So, and this would be a Kai question, but roughly speaking, there's 2 years left on his contract, I believe, 16 and 16 from a cap savings for the Saints for you guys, roughly like $18 million next year and the following year.
Yeah, I mean, it gets complicated because there's, acceleration from bonuses that were amortized and some things like that. But yeah, I mean, listen, you said it right. It's $18 million over the next 2 years each year. That we'll be able to, use elsewhere. Let me just say this. Marshawn has been a fantastic player for us. He was a great draft pick. he's a defensive rookie of the year. The year that we drafted him, 17, and made the Pro Bowl a number of times. He's a fantastic player. He's a good teammate. I got nothing but good things to say about Marshawn. Unfortunately, the last couple of years, he's had some soft tissue injuries to deal with and a couple other injuries to deal with. But he still is, I believe, one of the better corners in our league. And Washington's getting a good player for their playoff push here and their run. So I wish him, nothing but the best. I really do. Ultimately it came down to a deal that I thought was, good for us, good value for us, and that's why we did it.
And as what always seems to be the case, you'll see him. He comes to town on December 15th when the Commanders come to town. Talk about what the Saints get in return. If I'm correct, you get a Washington's third, Washington's fourth, and you get back Washington's sixth that you traded away for John Ridgeway. So as it stands right now, you have a 1-2, 2-3s, 2-4s, and 2-6s. You gave away a fifth round in the Lattimore deal as well. Is that correct?
Yep, that's it. Third round pick, swap of fourth and fifth is the way to look at it. We get our sixth back. So we're adding picks in the draft, and we're moving up in the draft is kind of the way I look at it. And that gives us a good amount of picks in this next year's draft.
So it's a brutal business. We've talked about it before. Well, it just is what it is. If you don't think it is, go look at any NFL assistant coach's resume, and you'll see probably 15 to 20 stops, and that's a family man trying to do things. And yesterday, after the loss on Sunday to Carolina, releasing Coach Allen, I know it was a tough day in the building. It is what it is, right? It's the inability to stop the bleeding, to turn things around.
Yeah. Look, Dennis Allen, I think, is a fantastic football coach. And I think anybody in our league who would talk about him thinks he's a fantastic football coach. He is. I think in this case, look, the circumstances, you know, created the record. That's just the truth. And a lot of people don't want to hear it. I mean, we get silly things written like, the players aren't parking in the right spots. I mean, that's ridiculous. Players have been parking out there for the last 15 years, you know, because look, we've got construction going on. We've got, you know, 100 more employees than we had 10 years ago. That's just silly. And to equate that with discipline is silly too. I mean, we're the eighth going into this last game. We were the eighth fewest penalties in the league. That's a more of a comment on discipline than where a player parks, for crying out loud. but it just gets right back to, you know, what stares at you right in the face is that we've had an abnormal amount of injuries, including to our quarterback, and we haven't been able to overcome that. And so that puts pressure and stress on the organization, and ultimately it was cause for, you know, a change.
Yesterday was a lot about really kind of Darren Rizzi, but weren't able to talk to you. Did you address the team at all yesterday, or was it just Darren?
No, just Darren. He did a great job. We talked about what his message would be beforehand, and I thought it was well received. And look, anytime that you have, you know, a change in the middle of a season, you're going to have, you know, some emotion involved with that. And you know, hopefully that emotion creates a little positive bump. And I felt like, you know, that happened yesterday is that I thought Rizzi did a great job talking with the team, talking with the media, describing some things that we wanted to do differently. Just to hopefully jumpstart, you know, the back half of the season.
Because of his background, he was an associate head coach at Miami and the assistant head coach here. He deals with all of the players. I hate to say logical choice, but we're, you know, I mean, was he kind of the guy that you, because of his relationship with the entire team?
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned it. He is assistant head coach, you know, that's part of his role. So he's been involved in a number of those decisions that the head coach makes. I think he's a pretty obvious choice given his experience, his role as a special teams coach, which you just described. You do deal with, you know, almost every player on the team when you're in that role. So it's a voice that our players have heard before. He's used to being up in front of a large group of players and presenting and look, he's got a great personality and a great positive attitude at all times. And, you know, look, he was a candidate, you know, when we hired Dennis Allen, he was one of the candidates and had really strong performance in his interviews. So I think it was an obvious choice.
It's funny. You said the players are used to the voice of Darren Rizzi. You know, he screamed so much during the season. I was like, gosh, his poor voice. I wanted to talk to him. I saw him at a Pelicans game in the complete offseason. So I pulled him over to talk to him. That's the way he talks. You know, he's been screaming so long that's the Darren Rizzi voice. But I know that he talked about it. And it's when we say things like he wants to bring passion and fight to the team, it doesn't mean that Dennis didn't, but that's what he wants to do.
Yeah. And look, you know, I think you cited it, you know, Rizzi's always got this effervescent personality. He's got kind of this fighter mentality. And you feel that even when you're just talking in a regular conversation with him, you know. And so, I think that was positively received by our team and certainly by our staff and players in a really, really, really difficult circumstance.
More with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. A busy couple of days, of course, at Saints Camp with Dennis Allen on Monday and then Marshawn Lattimore today. And the weird part is there's 8 games left, right? I mean, you could say if there were 3 games left, you'd start talking about, you know, the process for a coach. But with 8 games left, what can you do other than create a big board somewhere, put a bunch of names on it, and do some background checks? What can you do in a search for a new head coach?
Yeah, look, that's not something that we're going to be real active with right now. There's plenty of time for that when the season ends. Our focus has got to be on our team, our players, our coaches, our staff. And look, it's you learn more about who you have and who the people are that you're working with in adversity than you do when things are going well. As much as Katrina and that whole experience was difficult back in 2005, we learned a lot about the people that were with the Saints at that time, and it drove a lot of decisions, you know, after that. And so, look, this is adversity. This is tough. It's no fun losing games. I can't describe to you as bad as our fans feel and the things that they feel, believe me, we're all feeling 10 times worse, but you can't just wallow in that. You have to get up off the mat and show some fight. And that's true for every single person in this building. And so we're going to see what we got over the next 8 weeks.
And no better team. Not that you needed to get anything better, but you get the Atlanta Falcons coming in. You know, they're leading the division by some games now because of Tampa's loss and the 2-7 starts by yourself in Carolina. So you got this, and then you're home, right? Cleveland home. Then there's a bye week, Rams home. So there aren't many times in an NFL season where you spend a month in your own bed. And so it's about making the most of it. And I know what you're going to say. And that is, yeah, that's true, but you got to win one. You just got to go out and win one.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, starts with, hey, how do we prepare on Wednesday, tomorrow? How do we approach, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then the game Sunday? And look, we just need to play some good football. And actually there was some good football played during this stretch, but just not enough. And, here's one thing I don't question, too. I don't question the effort of our coaching staff or our players. I think the effort and the fight has been there, but it hasn't been good enough yet, and it needs to improve for us to be able to get a win.
And maybe there is or isn't an answer to this, and I understand, but that just shows the razor-thin measurement of success and failure. 23-22, 1 point. And I'm going to, you know, Saints win that game. There's a possibility Dennis Allen's still the coach. Maybe he's not. Maybe he is. But there's a possibility that he is. And so that's how razor thin it is, right?
Yeah. Look, that's true every season for every team. If you wanted to look back at our season so far, despite all of the adversity, all of the injuries, the people that we missed. I just don't recall too many seasons where you didn't have your number one and number two receiver. You didn't have your number one and number two corner. You didn't have, you know, your three interior linemen, your quarterback for it just gets compounded, each week. And yet, man, there's three games there in this stretch that comes down to the last possession, and we have the defense on the field and we've got a chance to, you know, win the game. But we didn't. The other team made some plays, and so that's how close it is. You just cited it. It's not that far from being 5-4 as opposed to being 2-7, and yet it's 2-7. I mean, we've got to own that. That's what we are.
Alante Taylor in Irvine this right before training camp, as training camp started, said, "You know what?" He set himself down and he said, "I'm going to embrace being the slot. I'm going to be the best slot receiver, a DB I can be." And, you know, here's how things, you know, move around week 10. And he's going to be your starting outside corner. I mean, it's just kind of, it's the life in the NFL.
Yeah. And look, I would say this, regardless of whether he's playing a nickel or playing outside, he's been fantastic this year. He has not just an improvement, but a leap. And I think it starts with him embracing whatever role he has and then performing. And he's just been fantastic in his attitude, his effort, everything about Alante Taylor has been fantastic. And we got a number of guys in that category, but you brought him up, and I would echo that. He's really been fantastic, and we see it every week. It's not, he's been consistent. That's another part of the equation here.
And I think one of the things that Coach Rizzi talked about, and at least I know yesterday he's the interim coach. I mean, to me, I don't know. He's just the head coach. He's just Coach Rizzi now. I don't know. We'll have to figure that one out. But he talked about it. It's about change, right? Change doesn't mean it's bad. Change doesn't mean it's good. It's about change. And if you don't make changes but expect different results, and I think maybe it's not lost, but you're going to have a new head coach in Darren Rizzi. He's still going to handle a lot of the special teams. But you got a new guy calling plays for your defense, Joe Woods. Now, he did it in the preseason. He's a veteran, but it's change.
Yeah, it is. And that'll be different. But man, we have a lot of capable coaches on the defensive side of the ball. And hopefully, we'll play well.
The Saints Hour will continue with Mickey Loomis after this. This is the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Just a couple more questions. We'll let you go. We appreciate it. I know it's a lot going on over there. When I was looking through, and I may have even talked to Coach Rizzi about this, he's at Miami. I think he starts in 09, and he goes through like three or four literal coaching changes, firings in the middle of the season, new coach, firing, middle of the season, new coach. And he went through like four organizations. And you know how it is. Coaches come in, I mean, they clean house, right? I mean, that's typically what they do. And for him to kind of, I hate to use the word survive, but to last all the way they did it up until the end of Gase's term, and then he came to New Orleans, that speaks a lot, does it not?
Well, yeah, absolutely it does. And, the special teams coordinators in our league, they're kind of a unique lot. Man, that if you've got a good one, you want to hang on to them, regardless of whether you're new to a staff or you're established. And Rizzi's been long recognized as one of the better special teams coordinators in our league, and we're lucky to have him.
Why is it rarely? Because Darren can reel off four or five of them, that become head coaches. There are a lot of interims, but why is it that doesn't always translate to being the head coach in a lot of situations, not all?
Well, I don't think that it doesn't translate. I think it's just that they haven't had a lot of opportunities, because the trends in the past have been, on the one hand, we went through a period of time years ago where, man, you had to have a defensive guy be the head coach. That was important. And then it became, and particularly in the last, 10 years, it's got to be an offensive guy because, offense has become, and the passing game's become more important in our game and taking a more prominent role. So it's cyclical, but it seems to shift back and forth between offense and defense, and doesn't really seem to include the special teams coordinators, and it probably should.
And finally, our next guest coming up is going to be Mark Ingram, who currently is the leading rusher all time for the New Orleans Saints. He has a 11-yard lead that, quite frankly, had the Saints made a first down on Sunday, he probably might have lost it on Sunday, all the records are made to be broken. He was your 2011 first round pick, played a long time, different teams, and then came back to finish his career here. He's just one of those quality backs. And, he made Alvin Kamara, a better back when they both ran together back there. And he speaks volumes for what it means to be a New Orleans Saint.
Yeah. Look, Mark was a fantastic player for us. Even better guy. He he's one of these guys that embraced New Orleans from the very beginning, embraced the organization, always positive attitude. He's a gamer. There's many, many times when he, went out there, gave everything he had, and he wasn't 100% healthy. And, him and I, I remember when we drafted Alvin and how quickly Alvin and Mark bonded. And I think that was a big help to Alvin. I think Alvin would say that Mark was a big influence on him, in his career. And look, I know I don't think Mark is in the Saints Hall of Fame yet, but he will be. And at some point, obviously, Alvin will be as well. So those guys are going to, they're going to walk together forever as Saints players and legends. Yeah, I don't have enough great things to say about Mark, including Manny does a pretty good job with the media now.
Yeah, yeah. So tough times, my friend. It's never easy what you had to go through yesterday with a friend, but a lot of football to play. 8 games still, so I appreciate your time. Continued best of luck for the rest of the season and turn this thing around.
Yep. Thank you, Mike.
Well, let's pause 10 seconds to let stations identify themselves here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. He was drafted with Cam Jordan back in 2011, and currently the all-time leading rusher for the Saints. Will bring in Mark Ingram next. This is the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Saints Hour. Mike Haas now talking with former Saints running back Mark Ingram. He was the 2011 first round pick. And I got to ask you right off the bat, because I know you're friends with Cam. Does he give you a hard time about being 2011 D1A and you're D1B? Does he give you a hard time?
No, Cam. He talks mess about a lot of things, but surprisingly that you mentioned it, that's never been one of them.
So you win the Heisman in 2009. You've already answered one of my questions, which was going to be, where is it? And it's sitting right behind you. So there it is.
I didn't have it for a long time, man. I won it my sophomore year, and it's not something that I think you bring back to the dorm room. You know what I mean? So my mom had it. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been a pride piece. You know, it could have been a negotiation piece.
Yeah.
But my mom had it for just up until probably a year ago. I just finally got it. And so it's right there now. And I actually got the ball, the Russian yards ball right there, where my thumbs at. You can see kind of like the little tag right there. The all-time rushing record, that ball is right there. And, you know, obviously that'll be going down, and Alvin will have his ball hanging up somewhere soon.
3 Pro Bowls, 12 years. Again, Alvin needs 12 yards, and all records, you know, this are meant to be broken. And to have Alvin do it, and he could have, like you know, had kind of, we were talking to Mickey kind of off air, could have happened very easily Sunday in Carolina, and it might have led, who knows, to a victory. A lot of things going to change. Who knows?
Right.
But it's going to happen against the Dirty Birds, and I would assume for your purposes, it couldn't happen to a better person, because I know how close you are.
Yeah, man, that's my brother, man. And I was just talking to him. Like you said, we were talking off the camera a little bit, and I was messing with him. I was like, I know you ain't trying to hear this right now. I was like, but you should have just went and broke the record and put me out of my misery last week. You know what I mean? Went for $170 a career day plus a record. That would have been just right. But no, he timed it great, man. He'll be able to break the record at home in front of the Saints faithful, and he'll be able to do it against our hated rivals who we don't really like that much. So I think he timed it perfectly, and just what he's been able to accomplish throughout his career, how he's grown as a man, as a player, as a leader. I'm just super happy for him. And like you said, all records are meant to be broken, and I'm just surprised it took him this long to do it.
Yet, you know, your friends are hurting right now, right? The friends in that building are hurting. Yeah. You played for Baltimore and you played for Houston with Saban and then Sean Payton. So I don't know if you've ever kind of gone through anything like this, but you know, how do they come out on the other end? I mean, it's obviously from within.
Yeah, obviously, you say that I haven't experienced it, but I have. I was in Houston that year when we won our first game, and then we lost like 6 or 7 straight. So I was there 1-7, and man, it was tough coming into the building every day. And, you know, you just kind of had to check yourself before you wrecked yourself. You know what I mean? And fortunately, the Saints came and traded back for me during that year. So I got out of it halfway through, you know, and I appreciate the Texans for giving me the opportunity. They believed in me. I was able to go there and be productive. And if I didn't have that chapter of my life, that chapter of my career, maybe the Saints never trade back for me. You know what I mean? And so thankful I was able to go there, earn a starting job, be productive, show that I could still play at a high level. And the Saints essentially traded back for me and extended me a year. So I was able to finish my career where I began. So I'm thankful for the Houston Texans for that. But at the same time, getting back to you, what you asked is, man, it just comes from everyone, you know, having to change your attitude, change your mindset. You have to go in there trying to win each day, win each moment. How do you capitalize? How do you put yourself and prepare to capitalize on Sundays when the moments get big? And they have the leadership in that locker room. They have the type of players in that locker room. Just have to be able to put it together, man. I have the most faith, you know, DeMario, Cam, Alvin. There's just a number of guys who have been there for so long, part of these winning teams, part of the culture shift that we had in New Orleans. And they know what it takes, man. And, you know, Coach Rizzi, he's a great guy. Everyone loves him. I loved him when I was there. I still love him still to this day. Obviously, Mickey and everyone in that organization, man, I have complete faith and complete belief. Obviously, it's a tough time. It's a tough situation right now going on this week. But the Saints will prevail, and there will be better days in the future.
We are talking with former Saints running back Mark Ingram, and you talked about it, culture, leadership. Now, if I were to talk to kind of current players, they're somewhat limited. So former players can give me a better picture of the Saints organization, Mrs. Benson, the culture, the leadership, because just like you say, you've been on, you know, you're in Baltimore, you're in Houston. Things aren't always as rosy as they picture. Give me a sense of this organization and this leadership.
I mean, this organization is first class, man, and it's a winning organization. It's a championship organization, and they have a championship mindset. You go from top to bottom, from Miss B, the support she gives to everyone in the building, the support she gives to the players, the support she gives to the city. She has so much love, and thankful and grateful to have her as an owner, because she's just amazing, amazing woman, an amazing owner. And being a player who has played in a few different organizations, man, I'm just super thankful that I had the chance to play for Mr. B and now obviously Miss B. Then you go from, you know, the administration, from the front office, men who are honest, you know what I mean? Who have transparency. That's all you ask for as a player, is for someone to be transparent with you, someone to be honest with you. And I was fortunate enough to have that, throughout my nearly 10 years in New Orleans. And then just from the locker room, from the training room, to the equipment, to the cafeteria, to people who take care of the fields, everyone in that organization, man, they love the Saints and they want the best for the Saints. And it's a great organization to be proud of. It's a first-class organization, and they deserve, and the city, man, the fans who support us, man, it's nothing like it's like no other. The Saints and New Orleans are intertwined. They're one. And when one isn't doing well, the other isn't doing well. You know, it kind of is cohesive in that way. And the fans deserve a winning football team. They deserve a championship football team. And the players in the locker room, I know they grinding their butt off. I know a lot of them personally and close still to this day. Still talk to them all the time. Cam, DeMario, AK, amongst many others. Big C's, Ruiz. And, man, it's just I believe in this team. I believe in who they have in that building, man, because it's all first-class individuals who have the same mindset. And like you said, man, it's not always sunshine and rainbows. It's not always easy. You know, the measure of a man is how you respond to adversity. The measure of your character is how you respond when things aren't going your way. And it's not always sunshine and rainbows. Sometimes you're going to hit valleys. Sometimes you're going to hit dark spots. And ultimately, how you respond is what you'll be measured as. And I think the right people in that locker room, I think the right people in that building, the right ownership, the right front office, the right players, the right everyone in that building, man, from equipment to training to in the cafeteria, man, to the weight room. have a championship mindset, and I believe in everyone in that organization.
You've watched now from a different perspective, obviously from the media side. I love your setup you got there in your house or your office. But
doing a little podcasting, so
yeah, no, it looks great.
Thank you.
The devaluation in the last 5 years of the running back, to watch it happen physically. Oh, no way. I mean, if we'd been talking about Saquon Barkley 3 years
ago,
I mean, there would have been a different conversation. Like, what happened? Yeah. How did we devalue the position so much that then this year go, oh my God, we got to run the ball. Like, what? Right. How?
I think people just overlook the fact of, there's so much running back by committee, and they think that they could get a runner that can affect the game, that could be special in later rounds. And yes, they might be able to be productive, and yes, they might be able to be a good player. But when you have a special player at the running back position, you need to appreciate and value it just like you do any other position, because you see how Saquon Barkley is affecting the Philadelphia Eagles. You see how Alvin Kamara affects the New Orleans Saints, the amounts of production he has in both the run game and both the pass game, and that is stressful for a defense, and that opens up the entire offense. You talk about Christian McCaffrey. You know, he's been hurt this year, but look at what he's done for the 49ers.
And even Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry.
Holy cow.
Everyone's talking about he was dead. Like he just didn't exist no
That's
more.
That's what I mean. I think it's crazy.
The man's about to go for 2,000 yards. And then you talk about Saquon Barkley is a perfect example to me, because the Giants and their fans, like, how do you not pay this man? Now he goes to your arch rival, and now he is torching you and showing his value to essentially one of your division rivals. And it's just
showing his backside.
Yes.
He's leaping up, showing his backside.
Yeah, hurling people backwards. But come on, man. We got to show the running back love. We got to show the running back respect, man, because that position does so much. That position has to run the ball inside, run the ball outside the ball. That position has to come out the backfield and catch the ball. That position has to pick up pass protection. And I think that's where the devaluation comes in. Oh, they try to pigeonhole you. Oh, this guy's just an inside runner. Oh, this guy's just a power runner. Oh, this guy's just a utility player. Oh, this guy is just a third down guy. But no, when you have one particular player who can do everything very well, you have to value them and compensate them for that. Like the Bengals, they let go of Joe Mixon. Like, what are you doing? Like, Joe Mixon is going crazy right now in Houston. You know what I mean? So I'm just so thankful that these backs who were underappreciated are now showing their worth, showing their value, and hopefully they can continue to be compensated for that.
More with former Saints running back Mark Ingram here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. We are talking with former Saints running back Mark Ingram, you know, number 28. Number 22, number 21, number 2, number 14. You know, Mark, my job is the play-by-play. I have to know the numbers of the
number
players.
Number 5, too.
Number 5. You see, you're killing me. But I do, on your Twitter, it's at Mark Ingram 22, right?
At Mark Ingram the second.
The second. So is there, of those, there's 6 total, what is their favorite?
My favorite
What's
is
your
obviously
number?
My number's 22, man.
Okay.
It's always been Deuce Deuce. It's always been Deuce Deuce, man. And that was me in college. And unfortunately, when I got to the Saints, TP, another great 22, he had it. And so I feel like that 22 number is a special number for the Saints, man, because it's always darned by a dog. You know what I mean? It's always darned by a dog. And now we got my boy Rashid Shaheed out there balling in the deuce deuce. So super proud to see that 22 legacy getting carried on. And the 28 was a special number for me too, because me and my dad both got drafted number 28th overall. So not having 22 sucked coming out, but the 28 had a special meaning. Then the 22, then when I got to Baltimore, Jimmy Smith, who was in our 2011 draft class, he had 22. He was like there for 10 years. He wouldn't give it, so I put on a 2-1, which was clean. I liked the 2-1. Then went to Houston. I had the choice of the 22 and or the deuce. And, you know, I'm marking him the second, so I just rocked with the deuce. Came back to New Orleans. They didn't have no numbers available, so I went with 14. 14 was the best of the worst. And then, Chauncey still had 22. Then he left, and I had number 5 because I hated the 14. And then he left, and then I got my 22 back. So
I must have missed the five. That's how many daggone jerseys you have. I missed it.
So the 14, it was the five was a transition from 14 to 22. I didn't like 14 no more. Chauncey was still there, had 22. So I had number five all preseason. And then he got traded to Philly, and then before the regular season, he got traded to Philly, and that's when I ended up getting my 22. Rightfully so.
You've mentioned Deuce a couple of times, and you know he's my color analyst, sit beside him, and he's the best. I mean, just in all phases. And we do talk about all records are meant to be broken, but I've told Deuce this. He has a record that's total yards from scrimmage for the season, not mm-hmm. for the season, not career, and it's 2,157 yards. So he did it back in 2003. It's 1,641 rushing. So to beat it, you'd have to have about 1,100 yards rushing and receiving. And I don't care if they go to 18 games or whatever. So I look at that season record. So he's the next guy on the list is George Rogers, 1981. Mm. Then Dalton Hilliard, 1989. To me, the way the NFL is structured now, I don't think you're going to see a guy with 1,100 yards rushing and 1,100 yards receiving. I think that record for Deuce, to me, it feels pretty solid.
I mean, you talk about 2,100 scrimmage yards. That's an elite season there. Right. That is huge. That's a big number. And you talk about 1,600 rushing. That's a big number in itself. Then to add another 500 or 400 and change receiving, that just shows his versatility and the type of impact that he had as a player. That's a huge number, and Deuce, that might be safe, but
we all say that.
Yeah, the way Alvin is playing, man,
he would be the only guy.
Yeah, he's looking to be able to have his first 1,000-yard rushing season, which is crazy stat, surprising stat, but also, I mean, this is crazy, man. But that's a big number, and it's going to take a special performance, probably like an MVP type of performance, to be able to beat that.
Right. No, I totally agree. You also mentioned we were talking about Double Deuce, and you mentioned your dad. What's the best advice you got from your dad?
Man, I think it was just being life, man. Just, you know, respect people, treat people the right way, and never let nobody outwork you, man. I mean, those things sound so cliche, but those are things that I got brought up on, was respect, manners, treat people the right way. Never let nobody outwork me. And that kind of brought me to where I am now, man. And just always believing in myself, staying confident in myself, family. And, you know, those are just lessons that, you know, my father just kind of instilled in me and ingrained in me. And, you know, it sounds so cliche, but I wish the world would kind of have that same mindset, you know, care for one another, treat people the right way, have manners, have appreciation for, you know, your peers and for people that you don't really know. And work your butt off, man. If you're going to do something, do it the right way. Do it the best of your ability. And it's never going to be, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Everyone has this illusion that people who have success, that it's easy.
That's social media, right?
Yep. There's this illusion that success is just easy. And it's not, man. There's no elevator. You can't get on the elevator and go to floor 50. No, you got to walk the stairs, man. You got to take the stairs. You have to take a break. I have to go back down the flight of stairs, but you got to keep climbing. You got to keep climbing. You got to keep going. You got to keep believing and keep persevering, man, because there's always going to be an obstacle. There's always going to be some adversity. And the way you respond, the way you overcome that, it shows the true character and the true value of a man. So all those things I learned from my father, and I'm thankful to my father, because without him, I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be in this position today. I wouldn't be in this seat today with a 12-year career, with a Heisman Trophy behind me, with, you know, a media career. So I'm just thankful for my father, because he always told me he made a lot of mistakes that I didn't have to make the mistakes, because I should just learn from him. And I appreciate him, and I love him with all my heart.
You have Jari Evans going into the Ring of Honor in a couple of weeks, Atlanta this week. And so will you be here at all coming up in the next few weeks?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to see if I can.
I don't
know
if you know there's a little Alabama LSU game somewhere in there too.
Yes. I'm trying to see if I can make it to that. And if I can make it to that, I'll be able to make it to Sunday's game and see Alvin beat the record and see, is Ja going in this weekend too?
No, next week, Cleveland, the following weekend, Ja goes into the Ring of Honor.
So I'm plotting on it right now, but at the same time, man, I have this responsibility because I'm the flag football coach of both my daughter's and my son's team, and they play Sundays. So,
hey,
you know,
parenting comes first, man. You just talked about your dad.
Yeah, but I'm like the third, fourth assistant, so I think they could survive.
Wait, you're not even the head coach? Like, you?
I don't want to be the head coach because I don't want parents asking me what time practice is.
Why isn't my kid playing?
Yeah, I don't want parents asking me where the game is at. I want parents asking why my kid ain't playing. No, I could just be there, have hands on to the kids who paying attention, the kids who want to be there, and also be there for my kids. So wow. No, but it's a humbling, gratifying experience, man. And I have some of my best joy these days, man. Seeing a kid who really wasn't active or wanting to be involved, and seeing them get in there and pull flags, or seeing them get in there and score a touchdown. Those are some of my most joyous moments these days. So I'm grateful for it.
We are talking with former Saints running back Mark Ingram, and really enjoying it. Just a few more minutes that we have with him. Do you remember your first touchdown as a Saint?
Yes, sir. Versus the Texans. It was Houston. About a 12-yard run. Running all up Devery Henderson or Robert Meacham's back. He's all in the way. I'm telling him, get out the way. And scored a touchdown, man. And I had to thank the Lord, man. Took a knee, thanked the Lord. And I think it put us ahead or put us.
Yeah,
put
that was a game winner.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, it was a game winner. So,
yep. 2011, week three against Houston. It was actually 13 yards. So give yourself an extra yard.
Okay.
Fourth quarter, you were down 33-32. And it's a 13-yard run, and they go for two, get it, and win the game, 40-33.
Let's go.
Do you remember your last touchdown?
My last touchdown, man. At the Panthers?
Yep,
at the Panthers, yep.
Would have been week three, right before we went to London in 2022. So is that that Sunday before we went to London. So
that's pretty good, huh?
That is good. I mean, there's a lot of touchdowns in between, but I knew you kind of. I was curious about the last was not
Yeah, I knew you'd remember the first because
that would be, and you were spot on, man. It won the game. You know, it was a big run, and you were telling Meacham to get out of the way.
So that's he's classic. All in the way, man. Move, man. I'm trying to get somewhere.
So
but yeah, man, and so yeah,
we've had some time together, which makes us. We've been friends for 20 minutes. So I'm the play-by-play voice now, but I spent 10 years as a fan and the season ticket holder, from 06, for the next 15 years, I was just a fan, man. I didn't think I could be a fan anymore. So, but what I'm about to say is going to sound negative at first, but it's not, because I never considered you a fumbler, right? And you had one fumble in your first 3 years. You had four fumbles in your final 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. So there were times if you did lose the ball and maybe get it back, or if you did fumble, I felt immediately there was a new Mark Ingram, and that sucker was pissed. He ran with an anger that I didn't want to see the fumble, but am I crazy? I mean, it was like a different human came out.
Yeah, man, when fumbling, carrying the ball, man, you're carrying the entire dreams, the aspirations of an entire team, an entire organization, an entire fan base. So never do you want to fumble, right? And it's part of the game these days. These guys are punching out. These guys are ripping. And you never want to fumble. It's never an excuse for it. And every fumble I had, man, it pissed me off, man. And I wanted to make up for it. And so instead of sulking and feeling sorry for myself, I'd always try to make up for it, make a play for it, and show my teammates, like, hey, this doesn't define me. What I'm finna do next defines me. and that's how I try to respond, man. Just try to keep positivity, man, because when you fumble, man, it hurts, man. Fumbling the ball, like, it sucks, man. Like, it hurts bad.
Hard to put it on somebody else, right? I mean, like, you come to the sideline.
Even nowadays, like, I'll be carrying something or something to drop, and they'll be like, fumble. I'll be like, hell no, incomplete pass. Like, we'll live to fight another down. That fumble is something that you don't want, and I appreciate that, what you said, man, because I take pride and take care of the football, and obviously, I had some moments where I fumbled, and there's never a good moment to fumble. But whenever you fumble, man, you want to bounce back and make something happen for your team, man, because you first of all, you beg your defense to stand strong and bail you out of that.
That's right. Help me, man. Help me.
Yeah. Help me get out of the situation. And lastly, give me a chance to repay and show that, hey, I'm that guy. I'm that dude. So I appreciate you realizing that, bro.
Nah, man. You kidding me? I was like, why it happened, but after it happened, I go, you were hitting your own teammates. Like, get out of his way, man.
Yeah, man. You got to make up for it, man. You make a mistake. How you respond, man. How you respond to adversity. How you respond to trials and tribulations. It shows the true character of a man. I always kind of took pride in that.
Toss to the right side is Kamara. Kamara has a crease, crosses the 30, still on his feet. Alvin Kamara still on his feet, crosses the 40. I believe we saw this last week against the Chargers. His first run was 23. That run is 20. He did not have an explosive run until his 23-yard run and just picked up 20 on that one.
And congrats to my boy AK, man. I love you and you deserve it, man. And go put that record out of reach, young bull, please.
Yes, a new record and a victory over the Falcons. That'll do. And that will do it for tonight's show. My thanks to Charlie Long in the booth. We will look for you next week here on the Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.